Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, hour two is here, and we have a third hour as well, but this is going to go quickly, so if you'd like to call, call now, 888-914-9149. You can also send me an email. I've got some I want to read as well as your phone calls today, and you can send me an email by going to the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick. Click on contact, and you can also send me a message on Twitter. I'll be on the lookout for that there. My address is at Patrick Madrid. Let's go to the phones now. Let's go to Bruce in Reno. Hello, Bruce.
Hey, Patrick. A couple months ago, you were a lady had called up and asked, what happens to your pet when it dies? And your quick answer to her was nothing. Nothing happens. Mm-hmm. And talking with a few friends about that, we thought it was a little bit abrupt. And as I've heard other people and you as well say, prove it, that nothing happens.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I don't know that I can prove it, at least not to your satisfaction. I presume that you disagree with that statement. Is that correct, Bruce?
Yeah, I disagree. And I've looked up, talked with a couple of priests, mm-hmm. looked online, but then when they give references to the Bible, I always go to the Bible to look. Mm-hmm. And it really came down to the fact that no one really knows. And seeing how close people can become to their pets, I thought it might be a little kinder to just say, you know, we really don't know. Or I think nothing happens, but we really don't know, because I have not seen anything or read anything that says what happens. And that's why I'm asking you.
Fair enough. No, that's good. Well, I would say, yeah, I can't prove it. I think that the reasons for saying that are eminently strong. And I'll cite, for example, St. Thomas Aquinas, who in his treatise on animals in the Summa Theologiae, he describes the difference between animal souls. So animals have souls, plants have souls, insects have souls. Anything that's alive has a soul. And that soul is immaterial, but it animates that organism. So a dog, for example, has its soul. And what St. Thomas points out is that the animal souls, to use them as an example, are perfectly fitted for their bodies. So everything that a dog can do, or a cat for that matter, or a goldfish, everything that that animal can do is caused by that life principle that we call a soul. But there's nothing that the soul of a dog, it can't do anything other than what is available to it through the body of the dog, to eat, to run, to sleep, to metabolize, all the things that dogs do. The animal soul can do that, but there's nothing beyond that body. I'm sorry, there's nothing beyond that body that the dog's soul can accomplish. And to make that leap here, what St. Thomas says is it's because animals don't have rational souls. So unlike human beings, animals are not self-reflective. They don't ponder. They don't have the capacity for rational thought. And there are many ways in which, you know, we can say this animal is very smart, or this animal knows how to do tricks, or this animal knows how to do work. And that's not what he's talking about. He's not talking about the innate gifts and talents that animals have, some more than others. Rather, what he's talking about is the ability of the soul to do something that is not directly dependent upon the body. Human beings have that capacity. So we, through our through our intellectual and rational capacity, our souls can operate and do things that don't depend upon the body, which is why, as he says, the soul of a human being continues after death, because it ultimately doesn't require the body to exist. The animal souls require the body to exist. So when the body dies, There's nothing more for that soul to do. It just disappears. It just dissipates. So although I can't prove to you in like a, you know, mathematical way, the theology and the reasoning from our understanding of human nature compared to, say, animal nature, it's sufficient in itself, and here again I'm just channeling St. Thomas, to say that we can arrive at a certain certitude that whereas although human souls continue after death, animal souls do not. So it's on that basis that I made that comment. And it's not just my opinion. I mean, it's on the basis of very formidable theological minds like St. Thomas Aquinas's.
Okay, well, when you mentioned St. Thomas Aquinas, number one, I have no idea what it was you were talking about there that he wrote. But then again,
I can tell you, it's called the Summa Theologiae, and it's a Latin phrase. It means the sum of theology or of theological things. He wrote it in Latin. It was actually dictated, but it's available readily online in English. You can Google St. Thomas Aquinas, Animal Souls, and it will pull it up in English. You can read it. It's readily available. It's not obscure or difficult to get.
Okay, and then the other thing I was trying to use, and I know not everything is in the Bible, trying mm-hmm. to prove biblically what happens to animals, couldn't find that. And then when you mentioned that animals don't ponder life, well, realistically, we really don't know if they ponder life or not. I mean, it's just, and even those St. Thomas Aquinas that has his paper that he wrote, again, I'd ask him the same thing I'd ask you. Well, that's your opinion, St. Thomas. And I maybe have no right to say that. But then again, there are instances where animals do seem to be self-aware. They do seem to understand aging. Just because they can't tell us they're aging, they do understand something's going on. They just don't know how to express it to us because they can't talk. But I do think they're self
Okay, Bruce, I'm not going to argue it with you. I'm just, you asked me to explain why I said what I said. I gave that explanation. This is a topic that almost always provokes, in some cases, anger, defensiveness. People get really worked up on this issue. I'm not interested in making anybody more worked up, certainly not you. But all I'm saying is that the long-standing theological opinion on this issue, the preponderance of the opinion is that animals don't go to heaven because they don't have rational souls. If you don't agree, okay, fair enough. And, you know, we'll find out when we get to heaven. We'll have definitive proof then. But in the meantime, at least you can understand, hopefully, where this is coming from in terms of how one arrives at that conclusion.
Well, a lot of us will agree to disagree with you, Patrick. How's that?
Oh, Bruce, believe me, you're not the first person to tangle with me on this issue. Far from it. This is not my first rodeo, and I've done this many times over the years. So I get it. You don't agree. It doesn't bother me a bit. It really doesn't. But I appreciate the phone call. Let's go now to Michael in Pleasant. Where is Michael? Oh, Pear Blossom, rather, California. Good morning, Michael.
Hi, Patrick. As I'm reading the narrative of the Tower of Babel in different scriptures, I noticed that, for instance, in the New American Revised Edition, it says, let us build a tower to the sky. If I read in the Douay Rheims, it says, let us build a tower to heaven.
Right.
And if I read in another version, it says, to the heavens. Mm-hmm. Now, when I was in school, and young and in school, my understanding was, what I was taught, was that when the scripture used skies, we really don't know what that means. When the scripture used heavens, the ancient fathers told us that meant living sentient beings that we couldn't understand. And when it used heaven, the singular, it meant God's dwelling place. And what I'm wondering is if you have any insight on the, or if we even know any copies of the extent in the original language, so we would have an idea of what word is actually most appropriate to be used.
Okay,
Okay,
so are we talking specifically about the Tower of Babel? Is that the
narration of the Tower of Babel? In other words, to put it in another way, were men saying, let us make a mechanism in which we can go to God's dwelling and take mm-hmm. his power, mm-hmm. Or were they just saying, let us build a tower that is so enormous that we'll be remembered forever, or let us build a tower that will reach so that we can take power from beings that we can't understand at this time?
Right. So in other words, if I understand you correctly, you're wondering, what is the proper meaning, or what is the correct meaning of the term heaven or heavens or sky in Genesis 11?
Yeah, which is about the correct translation, actually.
Okay. Well, the term itself is open to a variety of meanings. So the heavens refers to, variously, the sky that we see looking up. It can also refer to the cosmos or the whole universe, the heavens, you know, the planets and everything that's out there. It could be understood to mean heaven itself, the abode of God, but that's typically used, as you said, in the singular form, heaven. So in the case of Genesis chapter 11 with the building of the Tower of Babel, my understanding of it is, and I think it's reflective of what the fathers and doctors say, is that they were naive in thinking that just because they could build a structure that was super tall, that somehow, like Jack and the Beanstalk, they would be able to get up to where God was. And their naivete was that they thought that God was like literally up above the clouds in some space up there. And obviously he's not. So, I mean, you could build a tower a billion miles high and it's never going to reach heaven because heaven is not accessible in time and space. So the naivete was born out of their pride, that they thought that by building a tower up to the heavens, in other words, up into the sky as high as they could get, up into the clouds or whatever, they thought that they would find God up there. So in a way, there's a bit of equivocation or amphiboly when it comes to this word. They had in mind something different by building this tower, but in fact, all they did was build up into the sky. So whether it says heavens or heaven or sky, I think any one of those three words is accurate because it captures the meaning of what they were trying to do there.
So basically you're saying we're not real sure if they had the hubris to actually think that they could take power from God?
No, I'm not saying that at all.
No?
No, no, I'm not. No, I didn't say that at all.
No, I'm saying, Well, maybe I'll have to think about what you said to see if I can. It took me 4 years to learn how to count, so it might take me a while to learn.
No, what I mean is, let me try to put it this way. What I mean is that it was their hubris, because they thought that by building this tower, they could get up to where God is. Like, hey, God, check it out. We're up here where you are. And that was naivete on one hand. It was also hubris or pride on the other. And so they thought, I feel like I'm repeating myself here, but forgive me. They thought that by building a tower that was really high, that went up into the heavens, that they thought that's where God is. But God is not in the heavens. He's in heaven, which is outside of time and space. And so they didn't realize that. And then, of course, when God confused them by making them speak various languages, this is an account of how it is that human languages are so different from one another. But in any case.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm getting an understanding of what you say. Something I'll have to think about. So basically, you're thinking more like they thought they could find God by building a tower rather than seek God by doing his will.
That's a good way to put it.
As a consequence, in a sense, he showed them his face and they were so confused that they could no longer speak to each other.
Yeah, that seems to be the moral lesson here that they say in verse 4, let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. And the Lord said, behold, they are one people, and they have all one language, and this is only the beginning of what they will do, and nothing that they propose to do now will be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and there confuse their language that they may not understand one another's speech. So this is a moral tale. It's God did not have to come down to see what was happening. This is like anthropomorphic language, the language of human beings to try to explain what God did. He didn't need to, like, hey, what's going on over there? I'm going to come down there and say, oh, what are you guys doing? It's not like that at all. So when we understand the nature of this story here, we can see that it's using these terms to try to account for the multiplicity of human languages and confusion. Like, you know, one group of people doesn't understand what the other people say. And I don't doubt that there was something like this. I mean, I'm not suggesting that this is a myth purely. I have no doubt that there was something like this that ultimately led to the division of the peoples in such a way that they no longer could communicate with each other. But as for whether or not this is a, you know, is intended to be understood in a strictly literal sense, I don't think it is. I think some elements of it might have been literal, but as a story, it's teaching a truth using this as the background. Anyway, well, I hope that's helpful, even just in a little bit. And by the way, I would recommend, Michael, read some Bible commentaries on this. You know, far greater minds, far, far greater than mine, have commented on this. The church fathers comment on this. You can read even modern scholarship, the Catholic Commentary on Holy Scripture. These are all sound, trustworthy commentaries that can give you even more insights. I appreciate your call, but I've got to take a break. So thank you for that. We're coming back with more of your phone calls on the other side of this quick timeout. Don't forget, I mentioned this yesterday, that Father Rocky's got a brand new video about our Lord and the Holy Eucharist that's available for you at Relevant Radio and using the Relevant Radio app. And that's in concert with the upcoming Feast of Corpus Christi coming up this Sunday. So it's yours when you go to relevantradio.com or use the Relevant Radio app. I'll be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Maybe this is why I very rarely talk about the question about do animals go to heaven? Because it just provokes a lot of defensiveness and anger. I don't know why, really. But it does. And as evidenced by, you know, a couple emails that just rolled in, you know. So if you disagree on that topic, that's okay. It doesn't bother me a bit. I'm completely at ease with that. If you don't agree with, you know, my opinion, which I'm basing upon others' opinions, say St. Thomas Aquinas, I'm not the least bit bothered by it. But it is interesting to note that some people get very defensive and even angry at the possibility that their position is not correct. So yeah, it is what it is. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Kaylin in California. Good morning, Kaylin.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
So my question is, I am a photographer, and in the past I've just like only shot weddings for my friends, and they're basically all Catholic. Okay. But I kind of want to get more into it full time, because I was teaching before at a Catholic school, and so I quit my job and I want to do more photography, but I am looking, like, I'm applying, and I was thinking of being an editor, like, for photos for another photographer. Mm-hmm. And this person shoots like gay weddings, and I think they might do also like boudoir photography. Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to figure out if it's like moral for me to be able to work for this person and edit gay weddings. And then I guess an additional question to that would be, as a photographer, like on my own, do you think at this point in time where we are in our world that it's like moral to shoot and cover gay weddings? Like, I don't know. I don't know if I'd feel comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. So, but I was just wondering what your thoughts were on that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough. Well, the photography studio that you're describing sounds like, if I were you, I probably wouldn't want to work there, because the likelihood of you having to do those shoots, or like you said, editing, that kind of thing, would be problematic. And so the boudoir photographs even more so, perhaps. So, you know, there are a million and one photography studios out there, and you live in California, which probably has the most concentration of them anywhere on the planet. So the likelihood of you getting a job at a photography studio that doesn't do those things, I think is pretty good, if I had to guess. So on that score, I would suggest maybe just keep looking, because I'm sure there are other alternatives out there if you just keep looking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because on the other hand, if you were to take a job here, what do you do when they say, well, we want you to go shoot this gay wedding? And you may say, well,
right.
I don't believe. Yeah, I don't believe in that. I don't believe that that's moral. So now you're in a position where you might lose your job, or you might, you know, there are all sorts of possibilities. But at the very least, if you look for a job that's not going to put you in that situation, then you save a lot of wear and tear, I think. And then the second part of your question about, you know, kind of in the times that we live, did I understand you correctly? You're wondering, is this a good line of work to get into in any case? Was that the second question?
Yeah, I guess just like, if you think that it's moral to photograph a gay wedding, like, I think if I was ever asked, I'd probably try to decline, like, say that I was busy or something. But yeah, like, I don't know, if it's just hard. Like, I don't know. I guess I just wanted to know if you think it's moral.
No, I don't. Here's why. Okay. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead. Did you have more?
Oh, no. No.
Okay.
That was it. Yeah.
Here's why. Let's get as basic as we can here. So the nature of the relationship is the sin of sodomy.
Right.
And I don't think I need to explain that, right? So,
yeah.
So it's based upon a serious sin. And it's the entire premise of this whole event revolves around that. So to be part of it in some way, catering the food, baking the cake, doing the photography, all of these things in one way or another, to greater or lesser distance from the sin, it involves those people in some sense in that sin. It's called cooperation with evil. And so for that reason, you know, if you take the stand that it sounds like you do, that this is wrong, if you then participate in some way in something that you know is wrong, and you do it because you need the money or something like that, that actually involves you in the sin in some direct or indirect way. And that's always something that you want to avoid. And you can, you know, you can use all sorts of parallel examples. But, you know, if it were, let's say that somebody wanted you to go and, you know, do photography for an adulterous wedding, and they weren't even going to get married. They're just saying, hey, we're committing adultery and we want to celebrate that. Can you come take pictures? You know, they're not homosexual people, they're heterosexual people, but it's the same kind of thing where you're saying, how can I go and assist you in doing something that's objectively wrong, objectively evil? And if I do go because I need the money, and I say, well, I'm just going to make the money, even though I realize that, you know, what they're doing is wrong, you've now involved yourself at some level in what they're doing, and so there's some culpability for you. So the moral principle here would be, try as hard as you can to avoid being in a situation where you would be participating in some way. And, you know, the martyrs, let's take them as an extreme example, those who gave their lives for Jesus, they were told you have to deny Christ, or you have to offer a pinch of incense to the idol to Caesar, or you have to do something else that they said, I can't do that. And ultimately, they paid for this with their lives. So that's sort of like the extreme end of the spectrum here. You're at the much safer, easier end of the spectrum here with a photography job. The martyrs are at the far end of the spectrum, but it could get to that point for any given person. And so to tie this in with something Jesus said, Kaylin, he said, if you're faithful in little things, you'll be faithful in big things. If you're unfaithful in little things, you'll be unfaithful in big things. So to my mind, a really, really big thing is if somebody is saying, I'm going to kill you unless you do something that would deny Christ. And if you want to be prepared for that ultimate sacrifice, the idea is to be willing to make many smaller sacrifices so that you would be ready if that ever should happen, God forbid. But if somebody is in the habit of making concessions on little things, and I'll just do this just to go along to get along. I know I really shouldn't do this, but I'm going to do this anyway. Why would anyone think that if that person got to the point where he's asked to deny Christ or he'll be killed, it seems like the likelihood of him denying Christ is pretty good. So I'm not saying that you personally would be in that habit, but I think as a principle, it's a good idea to be faithful in these little things as a matter of course. It's building up that kind of virtue of fidelity in you.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you. You answered my question.
Thanks, Kaylin. I wish you well. And for what it's worth, one of my daughters is a professional photographer. And, you know,
that's awesome.
Yeah, thank you. I'm really proud of her. She's been like ranked in the state of Ohio, and she's got more business than she can deal with. But she has had to turn away some things that just were not things that she was willing to do. And her business is thriving and has been for years. So I'm sure that you'll do well. If you're talented and driven, you're going to do well.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
All right.
Thank you, Kaylin. Good to talk to you. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Yvette in San Francisco. Hi, Yvette.
Hi, good morning. My question, you had a caller that she was talking about purgatory.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Her husband and her son passed away. So my question is when you say we pray for our loved ones that have passed away, so when we pray for their souls in purgatory, mm-hmm. when like sometimes I hear Father Rocky accepting calls during the rosary, and somebody mm-hmm. will say, I want to pray for all the souls in purgatory. Does that cover everybody, or do you have to be specific with names? Can you say, like, my ancestors have gone before me?
Yeah.
Can you say things like that, or does it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you don't have to be specific and say every name in the world.
No. In fact, I'll put it this way, Yvette, because most of us as human beings, we don't have the wherewithal or the brain cells to remember all those things. So if you have an actual intention to pray for somebody specifically, or many people by name specifically, that's very good. If you can do that, that's very good. Sometimes people keep lists. I have a list of people in my life who have died, and that list is getting longer and longer, by the way. So I remember to pray for all those people I have known who have died, but I can't remember all their names without having it on a list. But you can have a virtual intention, and that doesn't require specific names. You can, because the Lord knows. And you say, Lord, I'm praying for all those people in my life, all my relatives, all my friends who have died, and I'm praying for them right now. So you're not required to say specifically by name who they are, because the Lord knows who they are. But your virtual intention to pray for all of them is more than sufficient.
Okay. And then when like people call in and they say, I want to pray for everybody in purgatory, that helps all of them then. Right.
Yeah, God will apply those graces to, you know, he is just and merciful, so he applies those graces as best they can possibly be applied.
Okay, all right, and that's what I was wondering. And I just wanted to make a comment because you were talking about the gentleman that called about the dogs or the animals.
Mm-hmm.
And I can understand how he feels if you're a dog lover. Mm-hmm. You're really hoping that they are, but you know, whatever God's will is, that's all I can say.
That's what I say.
I understand.
I feel the same way. Yeah, I do too. I mean, this may surprise you. I mean, I can understand why people who are deeply emotionally connected with their pets would feel that way. And as I say, it doesn't bother me a bit. I'm not worried by people who disagree, or I don't feel angry or defensive or any of those things. But to use a parallel example, well, it's not really a parallel, but I think it is an example that might shed a little more light on this. Which do you think is more intense and important, your relationship with your dog or the relationship with your husband? I'm not trying to set you up with a trick question, but just obviously.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
Of course, my relationship with my husband.
Right. And
I get it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have something I want to add to that, but I just want to set that as a premise. So however loving a relationship you may have with your dog, it doesn't compare in any way whatsoever with how important and how deeply loving your relationship is with your husband. Now, think about this. Jesus said that in heaven there will be no marriage or giving in marriage, but we will become like the angels. We won't become angels, but we'll be like the angels in the sense that there won't be sex in heaven. There will not be sex in heaven. There will be no need for it. It will be superfluous. And there's no procreation in heaven. There's no marrying or giving in marriage in heaven. Now, I think this is worthy of our consideration. That is far more important. I think most married people would agree with me. That is far, far, far light years more important than however wonderful a relationship you have with your pet may be. So if even that sexual intimacy in marriage, if even that, some people will say, well, you know, if it's a good thing, it's going to be in heaven. If you, God is going to give you all the good things in heaven. So if you like pets, that's definitely going to be in heaven. It's not good logic. And I'm not saying that you do that, Yvette. And you know what, Yvette, I'm just going to say thanks for the phone call because I don't want to belabor your time, but thank you for that. So just considering this issue, stop and think about how something far more important than your relationship with your pet will not be in heaven. And you, I don't know if depend upon it is quite the right word, but we human beings very much treasure it and enjoy it. And it's an integral part of most marriages, at least for a time when you're younger anyway. And that won't be in heaven. And Jesus said so. So if we consider it, we can see, I think, more clearly that just because you like it in this life doesn't mean it's necessarily going to be in the life to come. More and better will be there. What is it? I don't know. And what about where the Bible talks or seems to talk about animals in heaven? Like the lion will lay down with the lamb, and the child would put his hand on the adder's lair and not be bitten. So these kinds of figurative verses that suggest this, I think, are better understood to mean that there will be absolute peace and tranquility and nothing can hurt you in heaven, etc. It doesn't mean that there will literally be snakes in heaven. I sure hope not. I don't want to see a snake in heaven, do you? I don't want to see bed bugs in heaven. There's a lot of things like that I don't want to see in heaven. So further food for thought, if nothing else. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to, Jane in New Jersey. Hi, Jane.
Hello. Are you there?
I am here.
Ah, great. Okay. I didn't know if I had you on mute. I wanted to grab you quick.
Okay.
So I have a question. I wanted to get your opinion. It's similar to two callers ago about her photography and her work. And I would love to get your opinion on my work. We work as a meeting and conference planner. We consult with a number of different organizations for their conferences. And we have one major client who is an educational association.
Mm-hmm.
And they're statewide. And they have a very large convention every year. And, you know, as I'm sure we've all noticed, the educational community has been a lot more and more indoctrinated with the LGBTQ agenda. But this year in the planning kickoff just really blew me away. I got really upset. Just all the implementation that they're looking to do was really shocking to me. And it really was breaking my heart because of all these educators who are coming and who are also parents. So I just was wondering about getting your opinion on my role with the company to support them. I mean, the ultimate goal of us is to support their show with the logistical side of things. We don't get involved in the content. And they, and their goal with this show is to help the educators get continuing ed credits. Mm-hmm. So I would like to think that I'm far enough removed that I'm okay. But I would just love to get your opinion on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a fascinating scenario that you're describing because it's not simply one thing, but there are different layers, it sounds to me. Of like, you know, you got mm-hmm. educators, so nothing wrong with that. Well, I guess the question I would ask if I were you, or that I would ask you to ask, would be, is there some way that you can pursue your job with this company but not be required to work on certain projects that you find problematic, like that one? Do you think you'd have that latitude?
Unfortunately, it is a major part. I have a major part in those shows. Mm-hmm. So for me not to do that would be a really large chunk.
Yeah.
I could try to, you know, shift some things so that other colleagues take more of my role where I am and I go into other shows.
Mm-hmm.
But right now it is a large chunk and it's pretty unavoidable.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds like it would be really hard. I mean, if they're asking you to be responsible for producing, for lack of a better word, say the propaganda or the celebration of this lifestyle, that would mm-hmm. be, for me, a bridge too far. If they mm-hmm. were saying, can you put on a show for teachers and the teachers are going to be there and this is a show for teachers and the teachers' union, the educators, and the focus is going to be on education. And by the way, part of what they're going to be talking about is this other stuff over here. Well, I could maybe see some daylight there where you could say, I'm not doing anything directly or intending to do anything directly to promote a lifestyle. I'm just doing my job to get the teachers' convention up and running and make sure they have their coffee mm-hmm. and snacks and their materials. I mean, if you could do it that way, knowing that there's an unintended side effect of this conference, I could see some room there.
Mm-hmm.
But if the sole mm-hmm. focus of what they're asking you to do is to glorify something that's sinful, that's for me where I would have to jump off the train.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I'll just have to be a little bit choosy about my tasks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe when you take your whole role and you break it down into tasks, I'll just try to stick to the tasks that are more work-related and less, you know, other stuff related, mm-hmm. the ancillary stuff that they're trying to have go on. It's just all the time it's becoming harder and harder to it's just seeping more and more into every
yeah.
aspect of our lives. It's so
ruining everything. Well, I'm sure you've asked yourself, is there maybe a different job you could take somewhere else that would help you feed your family? That's another question that I would ask myself. Hey, Jane, thank you. I hope it goes well for you. I really do. I'll be right back. Let me ask you, can the Catholic Church have a future if we Catholics don't understand our past? Experience history the way it should be taught in a free online class from Christendom College. Just go to principlesclasses.com.
Connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Now that's some good bass right there.
I am grooving to this.
Ooh. Yeah. Okay, so Charlie sends me an email. Charlie's listening in LA on our 9:30 a.m. 93 KHJ station, and he says, Patrick, I am a giant fan of the show. Thank you. May you comment on this Toy Story-related family film opening today and its controversial content? And what ought to be our attitude and actions can be, what can they be as faithful Catholics? Boycott, ignore, spread the news, pray, of course, thank you. He's referring to, and I'm only dimly aware of the specifics, but the new Lightyear movie by Pixar, I believe it is, has Buzz Lightyear, I guess, is gay, and there's a gay kiss in this movie. That's about as much as I know about it, and only from what I've gleaned from the news reports. So, do you boycott it? Do you ignore it? What do you do? Well, I mean, if you go to the theater and you plunk down your... How much does a theater ticket cost nowadays, or a movie ticket? What is it? $10, $15? Who knows? Maybe it's higher.
Yeah, it was like at least $13, I think, last time I went.
Okay. So. When you pay your hard-earned money for a movie... And the movie is blatantly glorifying something that, you know, is sinful. Seems like it's like a fork in the road. Is this something that you want to underwrite with your money? Now, some would say, well, it's harmless. It's just, you know, it's just part of real life. Well, in a way, no, it's not, because none of it's real. I mean, this is a cartoon, a very sophisticated cartoon. I really like state of the art of Pixar's movies and things like that, and I've enjoyed a number of them. But yeah, I would hit a snag on that issue. I certainly wouldn't bring my kids to a movie that showed that, and for the reason that if it's being done as a way to indoctrinate my children, all the more reason why I wouldn't do it. There are far better things out there. And you may say, yeah, but it's a really great movie and there's so many other things. Here's how I would approach it, Charlie, if I can use this as an analogy. And you're asking, what do? Do you boycott, you ignore? Ultimately, you know, I have a feeling that when you get down to the end of your life and you're on your deathbed, may it be many happy years from now, you're probably not going to look back with regret. Gee, I wish I had seen more movies. Gee, I wish I had watched that one movie, Lightyear, and I never got a chance to do it. I don't think that those issues will be issues at that time. So to kind of keep things in perspective, if it was a really hot day out and you're thirsty and I hand you this cool, chilled glass of ice-cold lemonade, and oh, it looks so good with ice and you're thirsty, and I say, by the way, just FYI, 10% of this is poison. 90% of it's pure, fresh-squeezed lemonade. It's going to taste great. And besides, you're really thirsty, I can tell, because you're sweating. Have it. Well, I'm guessing that you'd say, well, thanks, but no thanks. Even though you're thirsty, even though 90% of what's in that glass is entirely good and would feel really good to drink it, you would decline, I'm sure, because you don't want the 10% that's not good. So what if we tinker with that figure? What if it's not 10%? What if it was 8%? And somebody said, here's a glass of ice-cold lemonade, you're really thirsty. 8% of it is poison. Would you take it? Probably not. What if they said, okay, 7%, 5% of it's poison, 3% of it's poison, 1% of it is poison. Would you take it? I think most people are probably going to say, even if it's just 1%, if I know that there's like 1% of this that's strychnine, the rest of it, 99% of it, is delicious, fresh squeezed lemonade, I think most people are going to decline it. Now, I think rightly so. I know I would too. If I knew that 1% of it was poison, I would say, nope, I don't even want the 1%. Why? Because I don't want it going into my body. I don't want it harming me. And someone might say, well, just that 1%, 99% of it's good. The 1%, it's not going to harm you. It might taste funny, but it's not going to kill you, and it's not going to really make you sick. You're not going to have any like lingering side effects if you drink this ice-cold lemonade that's got 1% of poison in it. I'll bet you that you, whoever you are, and I'm not talking to you, Charlie, who sent me the email, just you rhetorically, I'll bet you you'd still decline, wouldn't you? Because you care enough about your body that you don't want to take a chance of putting something in there that you know maybe could hurt you. All right. The premise here is, ultimately, which is more important in the cosmic scheme of things? Which is more important in the eternal scheme of things, your body or your soul? Well, the two go together. You're a unit. You are a body and soul entity. The two go together. So ultimately, you will be together for all eternity. But at death, your body will leave your soul will leave your body, and your soul will continue. Your body will go to the ground. So in a certain sense, we could say, in a certain way, that what goes into your soul is even more important than what goes into your body. So if you, like I, would be, you know, really careful about not allowing something into your body that you knew could hurt you, how much more so don't you think you should be that way about what goes into your soul? Now you're saying, well, come on, some cartoon character kissing another male cartoon character on a screen, are you really saying that this is the end of the world? No, I'm not saying it's the end of the world at all. But in a way, it's kind of like that 1%. Or half of 1%. You know, at what point do you say this is harmless? And at what point do you say this is something that could cause harm? And it's not always easy to know exactly where that line is, but I think if you're looking for the line and you're saying, I want to make a mistake on the side of caution, then you're likely to get through this life more or less unscathed. It seems to me that if people take the view of how much can I absolutely get away with without destroying myself, you're probably not going to get through this life unscathed. So those are my thoughts. That was a long-winded answer to a simple question, but I think it deserves a bit more of an answer. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to E. Frank in Astoria, New York. Hello, E. Frank.
Yes. Hi, Patrick. I would just like to ask you a question that might not be too controversial for your show, but it could mm-hmm. be problematic in the sense that it may not make sense. I could talk to your call screener, and he did phrase the question correctly. And what I'm trying to say is, well, the question is, can a bishop assign a specific individual or clergy member from another order and appoint them as the pastor of your specific church? In my case, my local church, which works with the diocese. Is that agreeable under Canaan law? Because I've yes. been having a lot of issues and problems with a pastor who actually is from an embassy in Washington, D.C. He is a text translator. He's a prefect of the Catholic faith, and he's also a possessor of a master's degree from a pontifical mission university here in New York City. So,
if I can interrupt, E. Frank, those are interesting details, but they're superfluous. The answer is yes. The bishop has the authority to appoint a religious priest. So Carmelite, Franciscan, Dominican, he can appoint them to pastorships if he wants to. And I think E. Frank was having trouble with his phone because he's not there. I don't think E. Frank hung up on me. But that's the simple answer to that question. Let's go now to Michael in Las Vegas. Good morning, Michael.
Hey, Patrick. I've been waiting for this. Thank you guys for everything you do. I really, really
thank
appreciate
you.
It. Can
Our
you hear
pleasure.
Me okay? I'm calling. I wanted to call the other day. You were on the topic of abortion the other day, and you said something that hit home to me. I want to preface that by, you guys have a PSA that was out right now with Josh Raymond where he asked the priest a question. He says, what about the people that have gone to confession that they don't feel forgiven? And it did my heart good to hear the priest say that even if you don't feel forgiven, know that God is going to be faithful in his promise and that you are forgiven. And that did me a lot of good.
Oh, I'm happy to hear that.
In my earlier years, I had a relationship with a woman. I was very much in love with her. We did, unfortunately, have premarital sex, and she got pregnant. And I thought we were heading toward marriage. And it didn't turn out that she did actually feel the same way I did. And she insisted on having an abortion. And it still affects me to this day, even though I've been happily married and through the Catholic Church with my current wife for over 25 years, but it still affects me. So anyone out there, I just felt the need to call in for anyone out there who is a male who's suffering through abortion, and for any women that think that men don't suffer from abortion also,
yeah,
that suffer from the results of abortion, that's untrue. We do, and I still do. I pray a lot about it. I hope.
Have you had any post-abortion counseling and healing, say with Rachel's Vineyard or
Project
Rachel?
Yes, I have, actually. Yes, I have. Actually, the church I was going to at the time had some stuff going on about that. They had a nighttime, not Bible study, but where they do little side programs for anyone, male or female, related to abortion, and that was helpful. But it's still, you know, I hope that one day if I make it to heaven and, you know, and stuff, and through your prompting, I've been making it to confession much more regularly than I was about 6 months, 8 months ago. So through you and a couple of the other people on Relevant Radio and the things you guys talk about, I've been getting myself back to confession, and it just feels great. And
I'm glad.
But it's just there. I hope if I get to heaven, I hope that child is there and I get to meet them. I think about that sometimes, and I don't even know if that would work for an aborted child, but I hear you say things sometimes that maybe that child is taken up to heaven. So
yeah,
but I just wanted to let everyone know that there are guys out there that suffer from this too.
Indeed there are, and I'm glad that you raised your voice on this topic. Thank you. Yes, we are coming back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this. The number is 888-914-9149. We'll be right back.